The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
President Biden visited Baltimore Wednesday to tout his recently passed infrastructure bill. The president is expected to sign the bill early next week after Congress passed it on Friday. While at the Port of Baltimore, the president said that the infrastructure plan will help fix America's tangled supply chain and help bring down the price of goods.
Many people remain unsettled about the economy, and we all know why. They see higher prices. They go to the store online, or they can't, or they go to the store or go online, and they can't find what they always want.
The congested supply chain has helped drive prices up.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, President Biden acknowledged the soaring inflation rate. He gave a speech on Wednesday at the Port of Baltimore there and then went off and said, you know, the way we can get inflation under call, you know, under control, spend more money. We need to get behind the Build Back Better plan. So we'll see. I don't know how social spending, how infrastructure, things outside of basic infrastructure are going to help to do that. So the Bureau of Labor Statistics said Wednesday that the consumer prices increased, over 6%. It was like 6.2% over the same time a year ago. And that's a lot, unless your cost of living, your raise is 6.2%, you're probably making a little less money this year. And that's the highest monthly increase since George H.W. Bush in that administration. So inflation rates have been steadily increasing since April. You couple that with the supply chain and the issues that we're having, and of course, labor shortages. I still don't know the answer to that. I wish I did. Coming up a little bit later, I don't know why people aren't going back to work. Chris Temple will be stopping by. We'll tap into his expertise, and there's a lot to look at there. A lot going on around the world, too. First of all, good afternoon. It's great to be with you here. Hey, after the chaplet today, I've got some really great news to celebrate. All right. And I hope you'll stay with me for that. Father Rocky will be stopping by, and I think you'll appreciate what we're about to share. So it's some good news. I'm very hopeful for the future. I am, not just of Relevant Radio. I think of the country. I know things look dark right now. They look kind of grim. Always darkest before the dawn. I think the battle rages the most intensely before the victory. Sometimes I think we're getting close. I really do. But we need a lot of prayer. We need prayer for our country. We need prayer for our leaders. We need prayer for other nation leaders like Xi Jinping. I've been following China for a while, and I know people are always concerned about Russia. I think China is going to be our greatest competitor, maybe even this nation's greatest threat. The leader there, he seems to be cementing his role as the undeniable leader of China. Yesterday, the Communist Party of China, they basically passed a resolution that declares Xi's ideology as the essence of Chinese culture. I mean, what does that mean, right? NPR, they reported this. They said, in unusually effusive language, even for the Chinese leader, a party statement said it was one of the most decisive significance. Let me try that again. Sorry, I always have trouble reading. In an unusually effusive language, even for a Chinese leader, the party statement said it was of decisive significance for the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation, end of quote. That was the headline. He's only the third leader in the CCP, in the Chinese Communist Party's history, to get this status. With, the other two, of course, you have Mao Zedong and who's the other one? Deng Xiaoping, I believe. More than likely, it means he's going to get another 5-year term as the party's general secretary, which then make it 3 terms. And I'm just sitting back here. I don't know, but it makes you wonder what the odds are that he'll try and take power for life. And this is sometimes how it happens. Just something to put on your radar, something for you to think about, something for you to monitor. Again, let's pray for our brothers, our sisters in China. Let's pray for the conversion of that nation. Let's pray that they come to find and know God in a significant way through Jesus Christ. I think that is really, really important. Biden bank nomination, I don't know if you've been following this at all. He is a nominee that's saying, out loud, that, you know, they want oil, they want coal, they want gas industries to go bankrupt. Now, you can see the influence on this particular nominee, Ms. Omarova, of a very communist influence. And this is what worries me when you look at China, you look at the former Soviet Union, you look at Russia now, and some of the things that are now being put in our own country. You think your gas prices are high, and we'll talk more about this coming up a little bit later. Check this out.
Troubled industries and firms that are in transitioning. And here what I'm thinking about is primarily coal industry and oil and gas industry. A lot of the smaller players in that industry are going to probably go bankrupt in short order. At least we want them to go bankrupt if we want to tackle climate change, right?
No, well, that should give everybody a little bit of pause, right? Because we're going to see a lot more. I really believe that climate, the language of climate change, is going to be used to implement a lot of these particular policies. Your gas prices, your oil prices, I was reading this morning that propane prices for those in the Midwest is skyrocketing as well. It comes down to the leadership. It comes down to a lot of the decisions that are being made. But it is you that's ultimately going to pay for it at the pump. But coming up in a little bit, we'll dive into this in greater detail. I'll take a look at some of the financial issues that are taking place. We'll look at inflation and what looms for you. Global food prices, they're getting close to record highs. You've got the soaring propane prices sending a chill through rural America. You've got a record 111 container ships anchored off the Southern California coast right now. And this congestion, they're saying, is going to worsen. And look, the list goes on. The list goes on. A lot of this is tied into these high fuel prices. With the president reportedly considering shutting down another pipeline as these energy prices are soaring and we're approaching winter months. This is a key factor in these surging energy prices. And the president, in reality, could bring gas prices tomorrow. He's chosen not to, but we'll look at it because this is what's going to affect your Thanksgiving, your Christmas, those winter months ahead. That's for sure. Hey, another piece of news here. New York City, they've elected a new mayor, and I don't know. I saw him earlier today address crime. His name is Eric Adams. He's promising to bring back law and order to the Big Apple, and it needs it. One of the ways he plans to do this is by bringing back or resurrecting, if you will, the plainclothes anti-crime units, groups of police who patrol the streets and they seek to prevent crimes. When they suppressed those last June, crime rates shot up, right? We saw this in very liberal cities who wanted to defund the police. What happens? There was a lot of looting, a lot of robbery, a lot of crime. Murder rates went up, a whole litany of problems. And we saw how voters reacted. He's promising to bring them back, but one of the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement, a guy named Hawk Newsom, and I'm sure you probably have heard him, he warned Adams, and I have a real problem getting my head around this one here. He says, if you bring back these police officers to do their job, there's going to be problems. There's going to be problems. There's going to be trouble. So after a 30-minute meeting with the mayor-elect, here's what this guy Newsom, Hawk Newsom, again, the BLM leader. He says, he's warning, you start to bring these police back and make them do the job, there's going to be riots. There's going to be fire. There will be bloodshed. There's no way we're going to let some Gestapo come in here and harm our people. We pray for peace, but black opportunities prepare for the worst. So what he's saying is, like, you bring these people back and we will retaliate. You're going to see violence in the streets. You're going to see bloodshed. You're going to see damage. Let's pray that does not happen. I hope his words aren't truly what he means. And it just doesn't make sense to me. I think you're going to see police back on the streets and you're going to see crime rates drop. It's very, very simple. Do our police have to be held accountable? Yes. Do they have to treat everybody with equality? Absolutely. If there's a racist police officer, he should be outed, right? I think we're all on the same page for that. But communities are safer when there's a police presence there. They're not safer when cities burn. In fact, there's talk right now of the city of Kenosha. I don't know if you've been following the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. They're getting ready for potential trouble in that area. I mean, Kenosha is a very small little Wisconsin you know, town, if you will. And as you saw before, I was watching video of this the other night, people setting buildings on fire, breaking windows, destroying, looting. There was a man who was involved in a shooting. It's a self-defense trial right now. His name's Kyle Rittenhouse, an 18-year-old kid. I think he was 17 years old when this went down. He was arrested after the Kenosha riots last year. He killed two men and injured another one. And you know, legal experts are pretty much agreed. It is a clear-cut case of self-defense. The video proves it. Some of the people on the stand have said as much. But the prosecution there has not done itself any favors during the trial. I mean, Rittenhouse himself testified. He went on the stand, and he broke down and was very emotional and cried. I mean, he was reliving this event. To me, it was almost like somebody with PTSD, you know, a woman who's been raped or somebody who's come back from war or somebody who's encountered an act of violence like he did. He was hit on the head with skateboards. People were pointing guns. I mean, there was his life was threatened. As he began to relive this, he couldn't even get the words out. He broke down and cried. And then you have had celebrities all over the country, LeBron James, you've had people from The View and all over say it's bad acting. They were mocking him. He had some, you know, he took some sour candy before him, whatever. I mean, bizarre stuff. And I just felt bad for the kid. Showed his emotions. He broke down and has been mocked and ridiculed for this. What he went through was indeed traumatic. And if he is found to, you know, be innocent, and this was a case of self-defense, I hope those people will come back and offer him an apology. I'm not quite sure we're going to see that, but they're saying right now, after these Twitter commentators mocked him for falling apart on the witness stand, that, you know, there could be some violence in that city. They think the judge is in his camp. The judge reprimanded the prosecution a couple times during the trial, including one time when the prosecutor questioned why Rittenhouse was silent up until the trial, and you know, the judge and him went at it, and so now people are thinking, oh, you know, this judge is in favor of him, and so we'll see. You know, I don't believe the citizens of Kenosha want their city to burn. I don't think that's the case. A lot of times, these Black Lives Matter, these Antifa people, are shipped in from other cities, and they're the one who foment the division and ultimately go ahead and create a lot of the drama that you see in those cities. But today the jury is off and the trial will resume Monday. There'll be closing arguments. So we'll keep our eye on that next week. That should be a pretty big story. Let's circle back to inflation. Chris Temple is going to be stopping by. I want to get his take on this. Where are we heading? You know, when tensions are high, when things are difficult for people, sometimes people's fuses are a little shorter. There's a meme going around right now on social media, and the meme says this, is this quote, I usually don't brag about going to expensive places, but I just left the gas station, end of quote. It's true. I'm picking up leaves and mowing my lawn, right? And so I went over the weekend just to fill up three gas cans with fuel, right? And just regular. It cost me like $58, three gas cans. You know, so I'd have them for my snow blower, my leaf blower, my mower, whatever it is, right? I couldn't believe it. That wasn't even in my car. It was in these gas cans. So, yeah, gas prices are on the rise. Wednesday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released its latest inflation report. And as you know, it was not good. From October of last year until last month, inflation rose 6.2%. And the big number that struck me the other day when I saw the report, we have not seen this in over three decades. It's been 31 years. It's amazing, isn't it? How the economy has changed. It's absolutely amazing. Food and gas, of course, that led the way. I won't go through the litany of things that have increased by what percentage. I'm sure you've probably seen that many times by now. But everything's getting more expensive, and gas is not going to get cheaper anytime soon. The president has asked the Middle East countries to pump more to help us out. Produce more oil for us, could you? And guess what? They're happy. They're glad that the U.S. is going through this right now because it's putting more money in their pockets. And, of course, the U.S. could step up its own production of oil and gas again. But, boy, that wouldn't look good, would it? That would go against the administration's aim to become independent of fossil fuels. All this virtue signaling, right? We say one thing. And it's like, meanwhile, the people of America are suffering. I don't think it has to be either or. I mean, we can alleviate some of the pain here and still move towards being more environmentally conscious. One of the president's goals one of the things he wants to do is what he calls the Build Back Better bill, right? And we just passed a $1.75 trillion spending package. This Build Back Better bill is just rife with social service programs. And he claims that if we spend more, right, a couple trillion more dollars, oh, it's going to be good. It'll take care of inflation. It'll be inflationary, if you will. Look, I'm not an economist. I understand the basic principles of how all this works, and that does not make sense to me. More money, less goods, right? It's inflation. You know, you print more dollars and you got less goods. That's the problem. Even the New York Times tends to be liberal in its coverage and pretty partial to some of these Democratic policies. They're not falling for this one. They actually cited economic experts who said that in the long run, perhaps it might slow inflation down, but in the short term, look, it's definitely going to go up. So I don't know what the muzz ahead looked like, just putting it on your radar. But here to answer your questions, also just to give us some clarity and perspective on it, is Chris Temple, editor and publisher of the National Investor. And you can find him at nationalinvestor.com. I get his emails. I appreciate his insight. I also appreciate his clarity. It's good to have him back. Chris, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. How are you?
I'm well. I'm hanging in here. Just looking at the signs of the times, trying to read what's going on here. And, you know, as I read a lot of sources and I watch a lot of outlets, I get so frustrated. I'm thinking, what is going on? Your take on inflation. I've been talking about this for a while. We saw the 6.2% increase. How bad is it right now? What do you see coming towards Thanksgiving and Christmas and maybe into the new year?
Well, the first thing you've got to keep in mind always with these discussions is that what you see on the establishment television and news media, and even in much of the financial press, the sound bites, you use the term virtue signaling when it came to energy, you've got people and economists that do that. The bottom line is that we have so many dollars in this world, one-third of which has been created by the Fed in under 2 years' time, that is the largest and most proximate cause of everything going up in price, no matter what you're talking about. Yes, the Biden administration in some ways has made a bad situation worse, especially with energy policy, which is an utter disaster under Joe Biden. But it starts at the Federal Reserve. Joe Biden is not the Fed chairman. And where you can understand that we're really in a lot of trouble long term when it comes to these new price increases, which, you know, variously the Biden administration or the Fed tries to blame it on supply chain snafus and allegedly transitory things. There's some truth in that. But bottom line is the Fed has printed too much money because it wants to enrich Wall Street. It's the most regressive tax that you can possibly have. Why all of these progressives that, if anything, want an even more dovish Fed chairman in Lael Brainard, who's under consideration, why they don't go the other direction and call things as they are and say that this Federal Reserve needs to be abolished and that we need to have a system that actually benefits people rather than Wall Street. Until you get down to the root cause of this, we're in for a lot more of the same, and we're only seeing the beginning of some of these things, and especially with energy costs, which is a complete disaster.
Yeah, no, I could not agree with you more. I feel bad because this is, as you point out, a silent tax. I hope people understand what that means. If it's a silent tax on the working class, when you've got to pay more and you're not earning more, it means you're bringing home less, you know, and even though you're not being taxed, not coming right out of your paycheck, it's coming out at the, you know, gas pump, it's coming out at the grocery store and all these other places where you've got to work. I'm curious, in terms of the long view here, you know, the president, Biden released Trump bucks, you know, in the midst of the pandemic when everything was shut down. And then on the heels of that, we know that there was more PPP following that. Did the bills and did the money that was issued, did that contribute to part of this problem? I mean, who's at fault? And you know, maybe we needed one stimulus check. Did we need multiple? I mean, how do you read that? And what impact did that have? Because we see people not working and we see a lot of money. I think it was trillions of dollars that were printed. But I'd love your take on it.
Well, look, again, first and foremost, you've got to look at the Federal Reserve because they are the central bank. They control the volume of money and credit, not the Biden administration, not the Trump administration that came before. When either of those administrations, under Trump, when we had the early stimulus and all of the different checks and so forth for people, now under Biden with his spending plans, the Fed in all of these cases is the enabler of more spending. The question really needs to be, Drew, is this spending, is it Marxist slash socialist kind of just gimme, 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 which is right. inflationary because right. it does nothing for the economy, or is there a point to it? I mean, I put out a very long issue recently. It's on my website if people want to get it, on the whole green energy thing. And I pointed out that where it comes to the green economy of the future, when it comes to infrastructure, we need actually several times more than anything that even the Biden people and AOC are talking about. This is many, many, many trillions of dollars to do things right. But it can't be this borrow and spend type of thing. There's yeah. got to be a way that through a social credit type of scheme or something that would actually help people and give them jobs. We would take people from service industries. We take them from today they're at home getting checks from Biden playing their computer to now they're out there fixing roads. Now they're out there working on the power grid, working on communications infrastructure, helping to build a new school or whatever the case may be. These things need to be done. And not the least of which is the utter danger that this country is in. And I mentioned this specifically in this report when it comes to our power grid. It could be shut down tomorrow by any one of any number of actors. We wouldn't necessarily know who did it.
No, I agree.
So where this becomes bad and it does become inflationary is when there is no productive purpose for all of this money that's being borrowed. And it's simply these giveaway programs. And that, of course, is what Biden is tilting towards.
Yeah, you know, our power grid is a whole other show, a whole other conversation. That's something that really has me concerned too. I've been following that for years now. I think we really need to fortify that. But to your just a final point here, if we could, you know, the president claims a lot of this is due to increased demand. You know, people aren't going to restaurants, he says, so they're ordering online, and it's creating a backup. And that the economy is going to get better. And you say there is some truth to some of this stuff with the supply chain. And then he says, look, we need to pass my Build Back Better bill. If we do that, that will help bring inflation down. How do you read those two statements? Is there some truth in them? Or is it farcical? I mean, what do you see? Because, look, the window is closing for the Democratic Party to get this bill passed. And if it does come through, I just wonder what it portends for the future.
Well, look, the first of those comments, Drew, yes, there is some element of truth to the supply chain issues and things like that driving up prices because demand has recovered. No question about that. The second thing with when you look at the priorities that are in this so-called Build Back Better thing, at least the bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed had a reasonable percentage of the total that actually is about infrastructure. But this other thing is all about left-wing programs on the family, and of course the Democrat Party's expanded definition of family these days, as evidenced by our transportation secretary who was on maternity leave while all of these container ships were piling up and everything else was breaking down. There is very little in the Build Back Better thing that is productive in the way it needs to be done, where you're talking about money directly into the power grid, into infrastructure, into green energy. And let's not forget, too, and I may have mentioned this last time we spoke, you've got an administration that it makes a big deal in this recent legislation. Oh, we got X number of billion dollars for charging station for electric vehicles while the same administration is trying to kill numerous and has killed already numerous projects in this country to be critical minerals dependent. Two projects in Minnesota, one about to be killed in Utah, the only one in this country that is part of the rare earth elements processing supply chain. So you've got people who are really maniacal that work for Biden that he has put in his administration that are just out to gut everything while Biden is out there probably believing what he's saying because he doesn't know any better, talking about how we're going to do green this and green that when we're cutting off our own nose as a country to spite our face. And we're gonna pay a terrible price for this. You're going to have people paying $6 or $8 or $10 a gallon for gas in a year or two, and we won't be anywhere near the percentage of electric vehicles to replace gasoline cars that they think we're going to have. Because they're killing our ability to do it.
Chris, we'll have to have you back. We'll continue to follow this story. No doubt about it. That's all coming up. But I just saw a headline. I don't have time to talk about it now because I got to leave it here. That Tesla just sold around $5 billion worth of its stock. So I wonder what motivated that sale. Hey, Chris, thank you. We'll follow you, of course, at your website. People can, of course, track you there. Best way to get there is, I'm assuming, just nationalinvestor.com?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks for being here. That's Chris Temple, editor and publisher of The National Investor. I'll be right back. Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, I am traveling to the Holy Land in February with our underwriting sponsor, Nativity Pilgrimage. Information is available at relevantradio.com/Holy Land. That's relevantradio.com/Holy Land.
So do you think college is the only way you can be successful in life?
No matter what you do in life, no matter what dreams you chase, if you have a degree to fall back on, you're always safe.
Financing college is very tough for millions of Americans.
Tuition has gone through the roof.
This is one of the most important financial decisions in your life.
That's a lot to put on an 18-year-old, and yet we're saying, do you want $50,000 in student loans?
I did look at it as it was investment in myself, like it's okay.
I always thought everything's just gonna be fine. Everything will sort itself out.
The student loan problem has reached epidemic proportions,
affecting approximately 44 million Americans.
There's something about the word student before the word loan that just makes us think about this differently, and like differently in a very bad way.
I had to do something.
I didn't have any other options.
I had taken out $125,000 after 4.5 years of college.
We've brainwashed kids into thinking this is normal, this is safe, except it's not.
There is no one that's going to stop you from borrowing.
Yeah, like when you want something really bad, you gotta take all of it.
Everyone has debt. Everyone has it.
There's a whole lot of people who view your ability to take on a ton of debt as their chance to get rich.
You know, here I am, 36. I have $1 million in student loans.
Student loan borrowers have less rights, less protections, and we use the full weight of the government to make sure you pay that back.
I know people that are planning to die with that debt.
Is that the American dream?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, boy, riveting audio there. That audio was from the trailer of a new documentary that Dave Ramsey and his team have put together. It's called Borrowed Future. And it's examining the culture of college debt in the for-profit university systems. And this is something I have been talking about for a long time, partly because I have 5 kids. My wife and I, when we had our kids, we had 5 of them in like 6 years. Like every, you know, year we turn around, we find we're pregnant. So that means, and there's no twins there. A few Irish twins, but no twins. It's, I had 4 kids in high school at the same time. I had 4 kids in college at the same time. So that's a lot of money, right? And I have a sister who has, I have 5 kids. She's got 4. And they did something radically different than the Mariani family did. They went ahead and they said, look, you know, we're going to pay for your education, you know, but only for 2 years of it. And she made her kids go to community college for the first 2 years, and they paid for the last 2, which is great because that means their kids really came out of school with almost no debt at all, if any, right? Other people say, look, I just can't afford to pay for my college education. My kids' education is too prohibitive. I can barely put food on the table. I can barely pay the mortgage. Or if you multiply that by 4, 5, or 8 kids, some of my colleagues here at the network have 8 children, you know, 9 children, 11. How do you do it in a situation like that? The kids have student loans, and you do too. I work with a guy who's almost 60. I mean, I think he is 60. He's still paying his student loan debt. He is still paying. And this is something that is absolutely crippling. Listening to that audio there, I was just thinking, it's so true. When you put the word student before the word debt, it takes on a different meaning. I mean, everybody does it. Kids have no understanding of money. They don't understand how that is going to impact their future, how being saddled with debt. And we're seeing it statistically right now in the culture. It's playing out in how many people now are putting off getting married, how many people are putting off having children. I mean, it is having societal effects, this debt. And I do think the institutions with this free money, this easy money, they raise their prices. I mean, the cost of education is ridiculous. I look at how much it costs me to get a college, you know, university education versus what it cost me to get my kids. So as we talk more about inflation, about government spending, this is all part of it. It brings to mind another government finance crisis. And it's something that, you know, I think will, you know, have to, there's going to be a reckoning for this. And it's student loan debt. According to NitroCollege.com, I saw a stat there earlier today. I was getting ready for this particular second segment. Currently, U.S. student debt, it's estimated at $1.73 trillion. $1.7 plus trillion dollars. A quarter of all Americans have some kind of debt. A quarter of them. Look around. You know, one out of every four Americans go into a grocery store. Look at the cars you're driving by right now. Think of how many people you're looking at right now that are carrying student debt. Nearly 45 million people. So the average student loan debt right now, and of course, it ranges. Some people are very prudent. They have small debt. Other people have big, as you heard in that piece of audio that we just played there. The average debt is about $37,000. And the average monthly payment, just under $400. I think that's low. I know people who carry student loan debt, and they're paying a lot more because they have multiple loans. Unless they consolidate those loans, which they should, you're talking about the average monthly payment being about $400 a month. So student loan payments, they've increased. They've increased more than 2.5 times faster than even the rate of inflation. So, you know, if the typical, I don't know, say $227 monthly student loan bill receiver, you know, say you had that in 05, kept pace with consumer prices, it would have only risen to $279. But today, it's just off the charts. It's $400. So, as you know, there's been talk about forgiving some debt. I know a lot of people are excited about that. Last month, the Biden administration moved on forgiving the debt of former students who went to for-profit schools that went under. And there's also some movement on those that went into public service after college and you're supposed to have their loans forgiven after 10 years of repayment. But you know, that hasn't, there really hasn't been a whole lot of movement so far on just regular student loans. So I'm sure your kids or maybe you yourself are dealing with this. If you are, I'm going to be joined in a moment by David DiCicco and Christina Ellis. They worked on this documentary, and the insight they have is pretty amazing. Of course, you know, people have already paid off their debt. And here's the other side of the equation. We'll talk to them about this as well. Look, a lot of people are saying, look, I didn't take a vacation to Disney World with my kids. I didn't buy the new car. I don't have a boat. I couldn't go out and do the things. I was paying down my loan. Well, my neighbor did those things. Now, all of a sudden, the government comes around and says, oh, I'm going to forgive that. That's not fair. What about me who sacrificed? I could have put that money somewhere else. I worked hard. I made sacrifices. I got them paid off. So they believe it would be unjust if the government forgave the loans for those who chose to spend their money in a different way. So we can talk about it. There's a lot to get in. This is a really important issue. It cuts right to the heart of what many Americans and what many families are going through right now. And David DiCicco joins me, a very gifted storyteller and filmmaker. And over the past 20 years, his work includes everything from music videos to television and featured films. And he's one of the creative directors of video at the Ramsey Solutions. And it's good to have him with me today. Hey, David, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, how you doing? Thanks for having us here.
Well, I appreciate your work. I do. I think it's so important. I really do. This is something that affects, I think, just about every household. If it's not your household directly, then it's you know, it's your sibling or it's your niece or nephew or somebody you know. First of all, let's start with just a basic. I'm curious, what led you to look into this and what did you discover in some of the research and some of the documentary work you did?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, there's no Student debt, it is a massive problem in our nation. I don't think there's anybody that would argue about that. And as we were just digging into this, we really want to tell a story that was focused on the impact it's having on people in an effort to hopefully help prevent the incoming students that would potentially be taking on the debt to avoid that path. And so I think that for us, when we were looking at this story, that was the biggest thing. Like, yes, there is a massive amount of debt. There is a crazy student loan industry from the government that's just lending out this money to predatory practices, like to collecting it on the back end. But the sad thing is we know this is a problem, and yet we are still having this cycle repeat itself with students that are 15, 16, 17. And it's like something has to stop, right? And so that's really what we were focused on as we were looking at this project and telling this story.
Yeah, it's crippling. I mean, there's no question about it. It's not only impacting one's credit, one's borrowing potential, but I think it's also having societal ripple effects as well. And what I mean, maybe a year ago I looked at this issue, maybe less than that. And what we're seeing is that people are no longer getting married. They're putting it off. They're moving back to living with their parents. They're not having children because they feel they can't afford it. It's even impacting mental health. What are some of the ramifications of this type of debt? What have you found? What are you seeing societally, if anything at all?
Yeah, no, people are not buying homes. They're not contributing to their retirement savings. They're not being able to set themselves up to, one, live the life that they wanted to live when they were told, get a degree, go to college, take on this debt, you'll be fine. That debt is holding them back, and it's crippling our economy because people aren't able to do that. They aren't able to actually contribute in a way that helps society and helps our economics. And that ripple effect, I mean, it is across the entire nation. There's a gentleman we talked to in the film, Seth Frotman, who is very much in the thick of it. And he's talked to people in big cities, small towns, all across this nation, and it's the same story. How has this happened to me when I did everything I was told? And it just needs to stop.
Yeah, you know, it's a divisive issue in this respect. You know, I'm all about forgiveness of certain debt. You know, I think it would be good. But at the same time, I understand other people who say, you know what? I just finished paying my student loan off after 10 years, or, oh my gosh, I've made such sacrifices. I worked a second job or whatever. I didn't take the trip, buy the boat, take the vacation, do whatever. How do you think this will shake out? I know the president talked. There was a progressive branch of the Democratic Party. I think they wanted like $50,000 written off. The president, I think, was open to about $10,000. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere. What are your thoughts on how we remedy this problem? I think if we can help some of the citizenry that have it, that'll be good for their future. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who feel that won't be just. How do you read that, and what kind of discussions have you heard?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And even as we're making this, it's like, what is the solution? For the doc, obviously our solution and the story we're telling is, one, to not take on the debt. Don't do that. There are so many options available to you up front to avoid being a part of the system at play. And for the back end, you know, our company, we are all about, you have the power, you can take control. And we're all about helping people get out of that debt through a proven plan. And as far as like the larger, you know, what can we do, you know, from a cultural and governmental standpoint, it's tough. I don't think there is a silver bullet to solve a $1.7 trillion issue. I think, and it's crazy to say 1.7. When we started this, it was 1.5 back in 2019.
Wow. Are you kidding me? That fast? Wow. That's amazing.
Yep. Yep.
How this debt is continuing to grow. I think things are changing, though. I do. I think people are reevaluating whether or not going to college, going to a university is actually worth it. I can't tell you how many people I know have their history degrees or, you know, they have their, you know, BA in something, and they can't get jobs. My own daughter, who studied abroad, she went ahead and, you know, has a degree in international business. She has she had incredible difficulty finding a job, is doing a job that's really not even paying her what she should be doing. So a lot of people get out and they can't get jobs or they can't work in their field. I know there's been a push now for some other type of trades, which I think are very noble and very needed, but nobody seems to want to do those. Is the cost of two things? Is college education worth it? I'm an advocate of it. I think it is. I made sure my kids all got their education. But maybe I should rephrase it and say, is the cost of it really worth it? Because in your piece, I thought you said something so brilliantly. When you put the word student before loan, it takes on a whole new meaning. Is the cost of college education worth it today? And should people go into the staggering debt?
Yeah. What we're trying to do with this story is promote education. This is not an anti-education story. It's an anti-debt story. And so, yes, education, college, it's still a valuable thing as long as you're going for the right reason to get the knowledge that's going to help you, not just to assume that the degree that I'm getting is going to get me the life that I want on the back end. There's a guarantee to a job. It's still hard work. I remember when I was going to college and hearing, yeah, people want experience. And I got my degree, and I remember leaving college being like, okay, I got my degree, I'm ready to go. And the same story was, where's your experience? Where's your experience?
Yep.
And I remember
yep.
looking back over those 4 years and being like, there were opportunities I should have taken during that time to help set myself up to win when I got out. And so I think that, yes, lay it all on the table. Look at what you can do. I love what you were saying earlier as far as those kids that were going to community college for the first 2 years to keep costs yep. down, get the basic knowledge, and then finish out. It doesn't matter where you start. It matters where you finish.
That's right.
And so if we can apply that perspective to how we go to college and how we get the education, I think you have so much opportunities in front of you to take advantage of.
Yeah, you know, if I could redo it personally, I probably would have done what my sister did. You know, the GPAs tend to be higher coming out of those colleges. There's no debt. I mean, you just... you're right. It's not where you begin. It's where you end up. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. If you want to get in, I only have David DeChico for a few moments. Christina Ellis will be stopping by too. We'll get some words from her. The number here, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
I want to break free. I want to break free.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
There you go. A lot of people singing that song, I Want to Break Free. Break free with the debt they're under, especially their student loan debt. It'd be nice, you know, when you get into debt, you have medical bills or you have other problems, your business goes down, you have a hardship. A lot of times you can go ahead and you can declare bankruptcy, right? We are facing a crisis in our country right now. Student debt crisis in this country is unabated, and it's continuing to balloon. It's continuing to get larger because of the pandemic. Defaults and payments and interest have been frozen for a particular period of time. That gave people somewhat of a breather, but you know, back to the grind. You know, at one time, if you were underwater, you could head to the bankruptcy court. But in 2005, Congress passed a law that made it harder to declare bankruptcy, and I believe it was a Republican-controlled body at the time. They were hoping to thwart bankruptcy fraud, especially on the student loan front. You can go get this, you know, $100,000, $250,000 education and just declare bankruptcy and it goes away. But so student loans became especially hard to discharge because, you know, Congress upped the ante for the hardship that a borrower had to show in order to get the loans discharged. And 10 Senate Democrats voted for that legislation, and one of them was none other than Joe Biden. But there's a case now, I believe, before the Supreme Court, maybe it was already heard, that's challenging that law, and the White House wants the court to ignore the case. It's doubtful, you know, it's going to go through, but where that is, I'm not sure. But my guest today may know the answer to that. I know this might be a fastball coming from left field for him, but I've invited to the show today a documentary filmmaker, a guy named David DeChico, who just worked on a film that addresses this issue. It's called Borrowed Future, and they're examining the culture of college debt and the for-profit university systems, because really these university systems are the ones that are making money off of you and of course, your children. And David, it's good to have you back. First of all, thank you for your work once again. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I know that's one of the frustrations for a lot of people who would have declared bankruptcy, but they just can't seem to get out from under this. What's happening on the judicial level with this? Is there anything happening in terms of being able to somehow declare bankruptcy with student loans, or where are we with that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. In what we were exploring with the doc, we found, I mean, it's incredibly difficult. It's not impossible, but it is incredibly difficult to bankrupt these. And as we just kind of keep going through the circles of government, I'm not sure if anybody really knows how to solve this thing. And I mean, we're seeing things in the news. We're seeing hot takes or different things here and there. But we haven't really seen anything that's really going to help unlock that for people yet.
Well, I know you have with you Christina Ellis. She's one of the subjects of your documentary. Why don't you introduce her? Tell us a little bit about her and the role she played.
Yeah, Christina's amazing. So she was able to go to college debt-free, and the way that she was able to do it was through scholarships. And she earned over $500,000 in scholarships to be able to do her undergrad and graduate degree here in Tennessee. And her story is absolutely amazing. She's recently joined the Ramsey Personalities team, and I'm just happy to have her here.
Good to have you with us, Christina. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
It's pretty exciting stuff. I mean, a lot of people, they're going to want to know your secret. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, well, the first day of my freshman year of high school, my mom sat me down and she basically said, Christina, I love you and I believe in you, but there's just no way that I can support you financially once you graduate from high school, so you've got to figure out your own way to pay for college. And at first I was shocked. I was like, why are you telling me this? I'm a freshman in high school. What can I do about it? And, you know, I started getting a little frustrated, but at the same time I knew that she was right. It was, you know, a financial struggle for my family just to get by, so it wasn't going to be a reality for her to afford college. So her conversation really motivated me to start doing research to figure out what I could do to graduate without debt. She mentioned scholarships, so we just dove into research trying to figure out what it took to win scholarships, what type of resume items I needed, what I needed to do throughout high school to stand out in the application process. And then I took all that research and applied it throughout high school. And then my senior year of high school, I treated the scholarship application process like a part-time job. I just applied. And thankfully, it paid off. I was able to win over $500,000 in scholarships and graduate completely debt-free.
That's unbelievable. So, you know, one of the things I learned as a parent, too, maybe you can speak to this as well. You know, there are loans, there are scholarships, as you point out, there are programs that can really help. And I think sometimes people are so overwhelmed by the process. You know, you go to college, you're filling out all this stuff, you don't know how, you got FAFSA, you've got, you know, your personal loans, you got all these different things that are happening. It can be overwhelming. Are there resources or are there things you would suggest to some parent listening right now or some student who really needs that help? I mean, what would you suggest they do first?
Well, first, I'd recommend for them to watch the documentary, because the documentary, it really exposes the problem and it lights that fire in students. I think part of the reason why students aren't pursuing scholarships and they're not seeking a debt-free path is they don't really know the realities of student loan debt. They don't know what it feels like to graduate with debt and to have to live your life with that burden. So the documentary really lays out what that looks like. It shows stories of people who are burdened with student loan debt. And then it also shares my story. It shares other stories of people who have graduated debt-free, and it encourages students to try to do the same. So I think one of the biggest challenges is getting students motivated to take ownership for their own life and their own education and their finances in the future. So that's where I definitely start. And then in addition, you know, I have a couple books out on the topic. We have a lot of great resources on the Ramsey website. If you search throughout the website, there's lots of great blog posts with guidance and different steps students can take to pursue their education debt-free.
Well, Christina, thank you. You are a shining light for a lot of people who might be lost right now and feeling overwhelmed by the darkness of that debt and all that looms ahead of them. David, I have less than a minute for you. If people want to watch the documentary, I'm assuming that's online too. Is that the best way to get connected? Can they buy it?
Yes. So Yeah, absolutely. So everyone can watch our feature on Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, and Google Play. You can rent it there, purchase it there. You can also go to barfeature.com to rent it. And something that we're doing is we're also giving every teacher in America the opportunity to watch it for free. So they can just go to barfeature.com and they can fill out their information there.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations and thank you. Thanks for what you're doing. A lot of parents are going to benefit. A lot of individuals will benefit. I've got probably about 20 seconds for you. What's the next project? You got one lined up?
Oh, man, there's so many different possibilities we can chase. So I think right now we're just trying to figure out what the next one is.
All right, sounds great. Hey, thanks for making time for me today. It's great to talk with you. Appreciate you. That's David DiCicco. And you can check him out. The film, again, Borrowed Future. If you're dealing with student loan debt or you're getting ready to send your kids to school, I think it could be a blessing, at least an eye-opener, make you think and maybe save you, a lot of heartache in the future. Hey, coming up, the Chapel to Divine Mercy. When that's over, Father Rocky is going to be stopping by. He's got a huge announcement for everyone. I'm really excited about this and can't wait to share the mic with him. So if you... I know you're going to pray, and I hope you will. Please tell others to join us as well, okay? But stay with me after we sign that chaplet off because, look, I've got such hope for the future. I do, and I think there's some great things looming. And one of the things that Father has really felt called to kind of promote is going to help bring about that change. So we got some good things coming up for you. All right, so stay with me. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk. We'll talk. Well, we won't talk more. We'll pray. Then we'll talk. All right? More straight ahead. Don't go away.